When the good Lord made Smoke Jensen, he hadn't included any backup in Smoke's nature. Running from trouble was something he just did not do. However, he had learned the value of a strategic retreat, and now seemed to be an appropriate time for just such a tactic. Yeah! He dug his boots into Drifter's flanks and sent the stallion leaping ahead in a gallop. Smoke cast a glance over his shoulder and saw the private scrambling after the revolver he'd thrown down. Hemphill scooped up the gun and fired wildly after Smoke, but Drifter's speed had already carried man and horse to the outer fringes of effective handgun range. He kept riding hard, heading for a nearby ridge topped by a thick growth of pine trees. Drifter started up the slope, his powerful muscles making it seem easy. Before Smoke reached the top, he heard the sharp cracks of rifle fire behind him. Smoke angled the stallion to the right for a couple of strides, then back the other way. More bullets struck the ground and threw up gouts of dirt. With a final lunge, Drifter reached the crest and darted between two of the pines. Smoke reined in and turned the horse so he could look back down the slope and see if the phony cavalrymen were pursuing him. Instead, they had stopped in the gap between those outcroppings, and they weren't shooting anymore since he had reached the cover of the trees. He saw them milling around down there, and he spotted Skinner. Smoke lifted the Henry to his shoulder and fired four swift rounds, aiming high enough that the bullets all struck the rocks and ricocheted off. He saw several of the troopers duck instinctively in their saddles. He hoped that would spook them enough to make them give up on the idea of coming after him.
After him!
He bellowed more orders and continued waving his arms, and the troopers started up the slope towards Smoke in a ragged line. Most of them looked nervous, as if they expected bullets to be coming their way at any second. In fact, Smoke could have picked off several of them with no trouble, but until he knew exactly what was going on here, he didn't want to kill anyone that he didn't have to. He knew this valley much better than any of those men did. He wouldn't have any trouble giving them the slip.
Yeah!
He faded back deeper into the trees, then turned and rode Drifter down the far side of the ridge, across a broad open meadow, and into more trees. His pursuers were being cautious, but several of them topped the ridge in time to spot him disappearing into the shadows under the pines a quarter of a mile away.
I see him!
He knew they'd be coming after him. He also knew that up ahead was a rocky stretch where it would take a good tracker to follow his trail. He allowed Drifter to pick his own path over the rough ground and stuck with the rocks for half a mile. Then he rode down into the wash and followed it for another half mile before leaving it and riding for several hundred yards in a shallow creek he had known was there. By then, his route had curved back around toward the site of the ambush. He thought Skinner might still be there, and Smoke wanted to have a word with the captain, or whatever the hell he really was. A short time later, he came across the same tracks he and Hemphill had been following as they scouted ahead of the patrol. With a faint smile on his face, Smoke turned the stallion to the left to follow the hoof prints once again. He could have turned right and lit a shuck for the Sugarloaf, and none of his pursuers would have known where he'd gone until it was too late to stop him. Instead, he was riding right back toward the men who, a short time earlier, had been doing their best to kill him. Smoke came in sight of the gap where the unsuccessful ambush had taken place. He angled to the right into some trees so he could approach without being seen. It took him about 10 minutes to work his way around to a spot where he could ride out and confront Skinner without much, if any, warning. Skinner was pacing restlessly back and forth in front of the gap. puffing furiously on a cigar. Clouds of gray smoke wreathed his head. A couple other troopers stood nearby with their horses and Skinner's mount. It had been a 50-50 chance whether Skinner had accompanied the rest of the patrol in pursuit of Smoke or had waited here for him to bring him back. Smoke's gamble that Skinner stayed behind had paid off, at least for now. He swung down from the saddle, left Drifter concealed in the trees, and slipped forward through some brush until he was able to step into the open no more than 20 feet from Skinner. Smoke hooked his thumbs in his gun belt and stood there facing the man squarely. Skinner, who had just swung around to pace back towards Smoke, stopped short and stared at him in amazement.
Jensen! How?
It's not easy tracking a fella through his own stomping grounds. I left those other hombres a long way behind and circled back around to you, Skinner.
He didn't take his eyes off the man he was convinced was a phony captain as he addressed the two troopers.
You boys had better keep your hands away from those guns. If I see you reaching, I won't take it kindly.
Skinner spat out the cigar butt.
Don't let him buffalo you, damn it! Shoot him!
One of the troopers swallowed nervously.
Smoke Jensen's got himself a big reputation as being fast on the draw, Captain. We ain't gunfighters.
Shut up, you coward!
Smoke could tell that Skinner was itching to reach for his own gun.
What do you want, Jensen?
For starters, I'd like to know why you tried to have me killed.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Smoke nodded toward the bodies of the troopers he had killed, which had been picked up and laid on their backs nearby with blankets draped over them. Their legs stuck out in plain sight, though, in high-topped boots and uniform trousers.
Those are two of your men I was forced to ventilate to keep them from killing me.
Whatever they did, I had nothing to do with it. I guess there's just something about you that makes men want to shoot you, Jensen.
Are you sure it doesn't have anything to do with you and Talbot wanting to get me out of the way? Since I've figured out that you're all just a bunch of outlaws and not real soldiers at all.
Smoke could tell by the surprise in Skinner's eyes that his speculation had found its target. The two troopers caught their breath, too.
I still don't know what you're talking about. We're the first Colorado Rifle.
You can call yourselves whatever you want. That doesn't mean the Army actually sent you here. In fact, I'd bet a hat the Army doesn't even know you fellas exist. But we'll find out soon, because by now Monte Carson's wired the War Department to find out what's really going on.
Smoke shook his head slowly.
You and Talbot overplayed your hand by trying to extort money from the settlers in Big Rock. That's not something the real Army would have done, but no good owl hoots would have.
You're just spinning some crazy yarn. We're not outlaws, and I didn't just try to have you killed.
That's not what Private Hemphill said. Where is Hemphill, anyway?
A slight crackle of the brush behind him was the only warning he had.
I'm right here, Jensen.
Smoke dived to his left. He landed on his shoulder and rolled, came up on one knee with a Colt in his hand. He saw Hemphill rushing toward him. Hemphill's second shot sizzled through the air only a few inches from Smoke's right ear. Smoke triggered the Colt, and Hemphill doubled over as the slug punched into his gut. His furious charge turned into an awkward stumble. He got off another shot, but it went into the ground at his feet just before he collapsed. Smoke twisted toward the other trooper. Instead of opening fire, they had rushed him, and they were close enough that when one of them left his feet in a diving tackle, Smoke didn't have time to get out of the way. The man's shoulder crashed into Smoke's chest and drove him over backward. Smoke hit the ground hard enough with the trooper's weight bearing down on him that the impact made the Colt slip out of his fingers. It skidded away out of reach as the trooper pinned him to the dirt and started hammering punches at him. The second man hurried up and aimed a kick at Smoke's ribs. The boot toe slammed into his side and sent pain shooting through him. He slipped a short upward punch through the arms of the man on top of him and caught the hombre right under the chin. Smoke bucked him off and tried to roll away from the other man's frantic kicks. Unfortunately, that brought him within reach of Skinner, who had grabbed a rifle from a scabbard on one of the horses and was waiting to strike. He thrust the rifle butt at Smoke's head and landed a glancing blow with the brass plate on the end of it. Smoke couldn't get out of the way as the second trooper kicked him again. Pain filled his body and mind. Strong hands cruelly gripped his arms and hauled him to his feet. Before he could even try to struggle free, Skinner stepped in and hit him with the rifle butt again, this time driving it into Smoke's stomach. Smoke would have doubled over, but he couldn't with the two troopers hanging on to him so tight. Skinner tossed the rifle aside.
Hold him, you two. I'm gonna teach him a lesson. Of course, he won't have very long time to appreciate that lesson before he dies.
Those words penetrated Smoke's groggy mind and warned him that he only had moments to act. With every ounce of his willpower, Smoke ignored the pain and forced his muscles to work. As Skinner closed in on him, fists cocked to batter him more, Smoke both knees up. That threw all his weight on the men holding him and caused them to stagger. He straightened his legs with a snap and drove both boot heels into Skinner's broad chest. Skinner flew backward, and one of the troopers lost his footing and his legs buckled underneath him. He fell to the ground and took Smoke and the other soldier with him. Smoke's right arm came free. Smoke got a hand on the ground and pushed himself up. Skinner struggled back to his feet at the same time Smoke was doing likewise. They came up right together and lunged at each other, slugging fiercely. For a long moment, they stood toe to toe, battling like a couple of wild animals. Smoke was able to block most of Skinner's punches, but some of them got through and slammed into his face and body with devastating force. Smoke threw a roundhouse right that landed squarely on Skinner's jaw and slewed his head sideways. Skinner's eyes rolled up in their sockets. He crumpled to the ground and landed on his side. He wasn't out cold, but he wasn't going to be getting up anytime soon either. Smoke stepped back, breathing hard. His hands throbbed from the punishment he had just given them by battering them against Skinner's head and body. He grimaced as he flexed his fingers, but he could tell that he hadn't broken any bones. His hands might hurt, but he could still use them. His ribs hurt, too, where he'd been kicked several times. He drew in a deep breath. Again, pain made itself felt, but he was convinced none of his ribs were cracked. He looked around, spotted his Colt lying on the ground, and quickly stepped over to scoop it up. He checked the barrel, the cylinder, and the action. Dirt hadn't fouled the weapon. He moved back so he could cover all three men. Both troopers still lay on the ground, moaning. Neither man looked like he would be a threat anytime soon. Nor did Skinner. That left Hemp Hill. Smoke had a pretty strong hunch that the hombre was dead, and that proved to be the case. All the life had bled out of the crumpled heap the private formed on the ground. Smoke moved from man to man, disarming him with his left hand as he carefully kept him covered with his right. He threw the pistols well out into a thicket of thorny brush, then did the same with the rifles he took from the saddle boots on the horses. The weapons could be retrieved later, but not without a heap of scratching and clawing from those thorns. When the three men were recovered enough to ride, he planned to force them onto their horses and take them back to Big Rock as his prisoners. With his testimony that they had tried to kill him, Monte Carson would be willing to lock him up. That might prompt a showdown with Talbot and the rest of the so-called soldiers, but Smoke figured he would deal with that problem when the time came. He wondered if Monty had gotten any response from his telegram to Washington yet. There might not have been enough time for that. Smoke scanned the country to the north. He didn't see any signs of the rest of the patrol. They were probably still out hunting him. He needed to move quickly. The swift drumming of hoofbeats made him frown and turn his head. The sound came from the direction of town. He looked around and spotted a lone blue-clad figure riding hell-bent for leather toward him. What the hell was a single cavalryman doing out here and in such a hurry to boot? Cold feeling stirred inside Smoke as his instincts warned him that something was wrong, bad wrong. A minute later, the trooper drew rein and gaped in amazement at the sprawled bodies of Skinner, Hemphill, and the other two men, as well as the blanket-covered shapes of the two dead bushwhackers. Smoke had him covered.
Take it easy, mister. I've already shot three men today, and I'm not really in the mood to make it four.
Jensen? What the hell? Is Captain Skinner dead?
No, but he's my prisoner now, and so are you. Shuck that revolver and throw it over in the brush. Same with the rifle.
But...
just do it.
The trooper swallowed hard and did as Smoke ordered.
Now, what are you doing out here by yourself?
The colonel sent me. He ordered me to find Captain Skinner and the rest of the patrol and bring him back to Big Rock as fast as I could.
Now why would he do that?
Because that loco Injun Black Drum and all his warriors are attacking the settlement. If we don't get some help, he's liable to burn the whole damn town to the ground.
2 hours earlier, Sally Jensen left the Dunn Hotel after having lunch in the hotel dining room. She had spent the morning in her room, reading one of the books she had brought with her from the ranch house. She and Smoke were both readers, and since there was no place in Big Rock to buy books, they had volumes shipped in regularly on the train from back east. But Sally enjoyed being active, too. So after eating, she decided to walk around town and visit with some of the people she knew. She dropped in first at the sheriff's office.
Hello, Monty.
Afternoon, Sally.
Monty greeted her with a smile as he stood up and came around the desk. He held a chair for her.
What brings you here? Not trouble, I hope.
No, not at all. Did you know that Smoke wanted me to stay here in town until the threat from Black Drum and his war party is over?
Yeah, Smoke mentioned it. It's a good idea, if you ask me. The way those Indians have been rampaging around the valley...
Well, I didn't want to add to his worries, so I agreed. But I'm already tired of sitting in a hotel room, so I thought I'd circulate around the town a little. You think that's all right, don't you?
Monty settled back down in his chair. He pushed aside the paperwork he'd been dealing with and shrugged.
I don't see why not. We can't rule out the possibility of Black Drum attacking the town, of course, but I don't think it's very likely. Surely he's got more sense than that.
Have there been any more reports of attacks?
Not that I'm aware of.
Smoke has gone with the cavalry patrol today to see if he can help them track down the war party. I don't like it when he rides off into possible danger like that, but...
I suppose you must be getting used to it by now.
Oh, not really. But there's nothing I can do about it either.
Yeah, I reckon Smoke Jensen's sort of like one of those forces of nature you hear about. When he thinks something is the right thing to do, there's no holding him back. It'd be like arguing with a tornado. What you said about the cavalry, though. Has Smoke mentioned anything about them to you?
No, not really. But I know he and that Captain Skinner don't get along, and I get the impression that he's uneasy about the rest of them.
He may have good reason to be. I've been doing some checking. No, never mind.
Oh, you can't just start saying something like that and then not go on.
Well, right now, anything I could say about those troopers would be sheer speculation. Nothing but gossip, really. But I'm expecting a telegram any time now that I hope will tell me a lot more.
Oh, you know that's maddening, don't you?
I didn't mean it that way. I just spoke without thinking. How about a cup of coffee?
Well, I suppose that would be all right.
Sally glanced somewhat dubiously at the battered old coffee pot sitting on the pot-bellied stove in the corner. Monty grinned and shook his head.
Well, I wasn't talking about that mud. I wouldn't ask a lady to drink any of that devil's brew. What I had in mind was that we'd stroll down to Lewis's and have some of that coffee he likes.
Oh, that's an excellent idea. Smoke and I have gone into Longmont's many times.
Monty and Sally got to their feet.
Well, it's a saloon, so I reckon it's not really proper for an unaccompanied lady to go in there, especially a married lady. But there won't be any problem since you'll be there with me.
There shouldn't be any problem anyway. A lady should be able to go anywhere she pleases without having to worry so much about propriety. But I suppose that's the way of the world, at least right now. Things may change someday.
Yeah, Lewis says he plans to hire a cook, make the place as much a restaurant as it is a watering hole. When he's done that, anybody will be welcome in there.
Even married ladies?
Monty offered Sally his arm, and they left the sheriff's office. When they reached Longmont, Lewis greeted them and escorted them to his private table.
We came for some of that coffee of yours.
Of course.
Lewis signaled to the bartender.
I'm glad to see you, Sally. I hope you'll feel free to come in here anytime.
Oh, that's just what I was telling Monty.
And I told her you plan to make this into a fancy restaurant, as well as a fancy saloon.
Well, it's a far cry from fancy as yet, but in time. I heard a rumor that Smoke has joined forces with the cavalry for the time being.
He rode out with the patrol that left earlier today. Do you know anything about this mystery involving the cavalry, Lewis? Monty dropped some hints about it, but won't give me the details.
Well, I'm aware that Smoke harbors certain suspicions.
Which didn't stop him from volunteering to do some scouting for them. I figure Smoke thinks it's more important to deal with the problem of Black Drum.
A man slapped aside the batwing doors at the saloon's entrance and rushed into the room.
There's a bunch of shooting out at the cavalry camp. Somebody said the engines are attacking.
Lewis and Monty leaped to their feet. Sally started to get up too, but Monty put a hand on her shoulder.
Better stay right here. If it is an Indian attack, you'll be safer here than if you try to get back to the hotel, because Lewis will look after you, won't you, Lewis?
Of course.
A pistol had appeared already in Lewis's hand as if by magic, drawn from the shoulder holster under his coat.
And I'll go see what this ruckus is all about.
Monty had drawn his gun, too. They could hear all the shots coming from somewhere outside. Most of the saloon's customers charged out of the place, eager to find out what was happening and to reach their families if they had any, or to find a good place to fight if they had to.
Monty, you said the Indians weren't likely to attack the town.
Yeah, but you can't ever be sure what they'll do. You stick close to Lewis. I'll be back if I can.
The sheriff ran out of the saloon. Sally hated to see him go. Her heart hammered inside her chest.
You'll be all right, Sally. I'll see to that.
I know that, but you won't be offended if I say that I wish Smoke was here, will you?
Not at all. I wish he was, too.
Maybe you have a spare gun I can use if I need to?
Lewis hesitated, then nodded.
Smoke has told me that you're an excellent shot. I think that would be a very good idea.
Fear clenched a cold fist on Smoke's guts as he looked at the wild-eyed trooper on horseback who had brought the news.
You're sure about that attack on Big Rock?
Damn right I'm sure. The Redskins hit our camp first. We didn't even know they were anywhere around. We put up a fight, but there were too many of them, and they had surprise on their side. Colonel Talbot ordered everybody to fall back into town. He grabbed me, told me to get on a horse and ride for reinforcements.
So he and the rest of the soldiers forded up in the settlement.
That's what they were gonna do, but I don't know if they made it. I lit a shuck out of there, just like the colonel ordered.
What about the people in town?
Mister, I just don't know. Like I said, I fogged it out of there as fast as I could.
Smoke already regretted the 2 or 3 minutes he had spent questioning the man, and yet he needed to know what the situation was. all thoughts of taking Skinner and the others back to Big Rock as his prisoners fled his brain now. All that mattered was getting to Sally as quickly as he could.
When you start back to town, go by the Sugarloaf Ranch. You know where that is?
Yeah, I know.
Tell the men you'll find there to head to town as fast as they can and to bring plenty of ammunition with them.
Smoke swung into the saddle, pulled Drifter around, and heeled the stallion into a run.
Hey, wait!
Smoke didn't hear what else the trooper said, if anything. He didn't have any more time to waste. When Monte Carson ran out of Lewis Longmont's saloon, he turned toward the sound of gunfire. As he looked toward the eastern end of town, his keen-eyed gaze spotted several soldiers running from the direction of their camp. A couple of them stopped and turned back, lifting the rifles they carried to fire at something Monte couldn't see. He saw one of the troopers reel, though, and then turn around to reveal the arrow embedded in his chest. The man dropped his rifle and pawed at the shaft, then collapsed. The soldier who'd been beside him turned to run again, but too late to escape his fate. He arched his back and stumbled on for a few steps before pitching forward on his face. An arrow stood straight up from where it was lodged between his shoulder blades. Monte knew he couldn't do anything to help either of those men, but before he could decide on his next move, the decision was made for him. A rifle cracked somewhere close, and he felt the wind rip of the bullet as it fanned his cheek. Whirling instinctively toward the attacker, he saw an Indian standing atop a nearby building behind the structure's false front. The warrior was trying to reload the single-shot rifle he had. Monte's Colt came up. The Indian's head jerked as the slug blew away a fist-sized chunk of his skull. He went over backward, tumbling out of sight down the roof's far slope. The savages weren't just chasing the troopers out of their camp, Monte realized. They were already in town. Monte saw citizens running along the street in wild panic.
Head for Longmont's. Get inside the saloon.
An arrow flew past Monty's head. Another grazed his upper left arm, ripping his shirt sleeve but narrowly missing the flesh underneath. He spun toward an alley mouth where several warriors had appeared. His gun blasted again and again. The Indians scattered, ducking back out of sight. He didn't know if he'd hit any of them or just caused them to withdraw for the moment. He kept his gun ready as he backed swiftly toward the bat-winged entrance of Longmont's. People were streaming in there seeking shelter. Lewis appeared on the porch, revolvers in both hands. Monte saw a couple of Indians running along the other side of the street tumble down as the gambler's bullets found them. Then Monte reached the door and stood to the left of it while Lewis was on the right. They continued firing, covering the townspeople who were trying to reach cover. After a few minutes, Monte didn't see any other citizens of Big Rock headed this way.
We'd better get inside while we can.
Right. No, wait.
Colonel Lamar Talbot had just come into view running toward him. The colonel was hatless and had his pistol in his right hand, the saber from his scabbard in the left. His left sleeve was bloody, but he didn't appear to be incapacitated by the wound. In fact, as a warrior leaped from an alley mouth at him with an uplifted tomahawk, Talbot struck first, ramming the saber completely through the Indian's body so that several inches of bloody steel stuck out the man's back. When the warrior fell in his death throes, Talbot struggled to pull the saber free.
Forget it, Colonel! Get in here while you can!
Talbot looked up, seemed to realize what was going on, and abandoned the saber. A couple of bounding leaps brought him to the saloon's porch.
Have you seen any of my men? I can't find them.
They're probably scattered around town, taking cover wherever they can. The only ones I've seen are a couple who were killed by the renegades.
Black Drum is attacking the town with everything he has. We have to hold him off. I've sent for reinforcements.
Get on inside. We'll fight from in there.
Talbot nodded. He stumbled a little as he pushed through the bat wings, a crazed look in his eyes. Monty hurried into the saloon next, followed by Lewis. As Lewis ducked through the bat wings, an arrow struck the swinging door on the right and embedded there. Lewis slammed the inner doors behind him.
Break the glass out of the windows. Every man with a gun, get ready to fight.
The saloon's big front doors had been freighted out from Denver and had been pretty expensive, Monty knew. Lewis could replace them, though, once all this was over. Assuming, of course, that the saloon and the rest of the town was still standing by then. Sally knelt behind one of the saloon tables and thumbed fresh cartridges through the loading gate of the Henry rifle she held. Several tables had been overturned and shoved up to the busted-out front windows to provide extra cover for the defenders. Colonel Talbot was behind another table at the same window as Sally. From time to time, he rose up enough to fire several shots from his pistol, then sank down again to mutter to himself,
"Damn savages!"
Over at the other window, Lewis Longmont crouched next to Monty.
I'm surprised they haven't attempted an all-out frontal assault yet.
Black Drum probably doesn't have enough men left for that. And they're scattered around the town, too, trying to wipe out the other pockets of resistance. You can tell that by the sound of the shooting.
Yes, it appears he's committed enough warriors over there across the street to keep us pinned down, while the rest hunt for other survivors.
A humorless smile curved the gambler's lips.
He's saving us for last, I think.
The best for last, I reckon. Where do you figure the rest of the soldiers are?
They must have scattered too. They never struck me as a well-organized fighting force.
Well, that's because they're really outlaws and not soldiers at all. I'm more convinced of that than ever.
I think you're right, old friend. Still, they'll fight for their lives. And they're keeping some of Black Drum's forces occupied. We should be grateful for that small favor anyway.
Yeah. But is it just postponing the inevitable?
Well, time will tell. And with any luck, help may be on the way.
Smoke rode hard toward Big Rock, but he had to rein in and walk Drifter for a while every now and then. The big black stallion possessed plenty of strength and stamina, but even he had his limits. And it wouldn't do Smoke any good or get him to Sally's side any faster to run the horse into the ground.
Whoa!
During one of those stretches, he paused at a high spot and hipped around in the saddle to look behind him. A thin column of dust rose in the distance. Smoke kept watching, and after a moment, he spotted the group of riders kicking up that dust. From the number of them, he was pretty sure he was looking at Skinner and the rest of the patrol. None of those men were to be trusted anymore, but right now, Smoke was glad to see that they were following him. Their guns might be needed when they got back to Big Rock. Smoke hoped that Black Drum's war party hadn't overrun the town and that the slaughter wasn't going on already. Smoke kneed Drifter back into a run. The urgency he felt inside him wouldn't let him delay any longer. The hour it took him to ride back to Big Rock was one of the longest in his life. When he got close enough, he began to hear gunfire. That was oddly reassuring, because it meant the battle was still going on. He didn't see any smoke billowing into the air, so he knew the town wasn't on fire. When he arrived at the outskirts of town, Smoke reined up and dismounted.
You stay here, Drifter.
He worked his way behind some houses a couple of blocks from the center of town. As he crouched behind a shed, he spotted a couple of renegades sneaking toward the back door of one of the dwellings. Smoke stepped out from behind the shed and brought the rifle to his shoulder.
Hey!
Both renegades collapsed with blood and brains leaking from their bullet-bored skulls. Smoke lowered the rifle and trotted on, circling the house. As he did so, he suddenly came face to face with another renegade. The warrior reacted instantly, thrusting the lance he held at Smoke's midsection. Smoke used the Henry's barrel to knock the lance aside, then slammed the rifle butt into the middle of the warrior's face. The blow crushed the man's nose and shattered the bone behind it. He fell clumsily and lay there twitching, with crimson leaking not only from his nose, but from his ears as well. The injury would be fatal. Smoke was convinced of that, but he drew the knife on his left hip, bent, and cut the renegade's throat just to be sure. Then he wiped the blade on the man's buckskin leggings, sheathed it again, and moved toward the front of the house.
Three of Black Drum's men accounted for, but there's plenty more where that came from.
As if to prove that, no sooner had he stepped into the open than an arrow came out of nowhere and knocked his hat cleanly from his head. Guided by his instincts, Smoke pivoted sharply and spotted the man who had launched the shaft at him. The warrior already had a second arrow knocked and was pulling back the bowstring. Smoke figured he was going to get his shot off first, and so he would have if an arrow hadn't flown in from another direction with no warning and struck the Henry's breech. The unexpected impact knocked the rifle aside just as Smoke squeezed the trigger, so his shot went wild. The other Indian fired a second arrow. Smoke twisted just enough that the flint head missed him. He triggered the Henry from the hip and saw the renegade fly backward as the .44 slug punched into his chest. But that left the other renegade drawing a bead on Smoke, who, as he spun around, went for his Colt instead of trying to lever another round into the Henry's chamber. The renegade who'd been trying to fit another arrow to his bowstring stumbled and dropped both bow and arrow. His right hand went to his throat, but he couldn't stem the blood that welled out from bullet-ripped arteries. He stumbled and fell face down. Didn't move again.
Five down.
Not seeing any more Indians at the moment, he ran toward an alley that he knew would take him to Center Street. His goal was the Dunn Hotel because he figured that was where Sally was most likely to be. Smoke reached the alley mouth and looked down the street. He didn't see any soldiers or members of the war party, only half a dozen bodies lying in the street, four men and two women, skewered by arrows or bloody from gunshot wounds.
Oh.
Dunn Hotel was on the other side of the street, about 50 yards away to his right diagonally. He glanced to his left toward Lewis Longmont's saloon, wondering if his old friend was all right. He'd check on Lewis later, he decided, and Monte Carson too. But right now, he needed to find Sally. Smoke sprang onto the boardwalk in front of the buildings on this side of the street and trotted along it. He would be out in the open when he crossed the street, so he wanted to make that time as short as possible. He wouldn't venture out until he was directly across the street from the hotel. He hadn't gone very far along the boardwalk when two warriors emerged from an alley in front of him. In a blur of motion, he drew his Colt. Neither man had had time to fire a return shot. Smoke stayed where he was on the boardwalk long enough to slide fresh cartridges into the Colt's cylinder. He had just slipped the revolver back into the holster when swift footsteps slapped the planks behind him. As he whirled, from the corner of his eye, he saw a man charging toward him. Smoke didn't have time to get out of the way. The warrior crashed into him, wrapping his arms around Smoke's waist as he drove him over backward. Smoke landed hard enough on his back that all the air was forced from his lungs, leaving him gasping and stunned for a second. That was long enough for the renegade to jerk a knife from its sheath at his waist and raise it in his right hand, while his left hand clamped around Smoke's throat to pin him to the boardwalk. The knife flashed down at Smoke's chest. His left hand shot up and caught the Indian's right wrist, stopping the knife with its tip a mere 3 inches from the breast pocket of Smoke's shirt. The muscle in Smoke's forearm quivered as he strained to hold the blade back. At the same time, his right fist came up and hammered the warrior's jaw. The blow knocked the man to the side but didn't loosen his grip on Smoke's throat. Smoke writhed in his grasp and forced the renegade's right arm down. He slammed the back of the man's right hand against the planks. That made the knife's bone handle slip out of his finger. A second warrior leaped out onto the boardwalk and pointed a rifle at Smoke. The first man, lying on the other side of the boardwalk, scooped up his knife from where it had slid and flung it at Smoke. The edge sliced across Smoke's forearm, cutting through his shirt sleeve and leaving a shallow gash in the flesh underneath. The wound stung, but not bad enough to make him drop the gun. He snapped a shot at the warrior, but the man was already moving. He lunged for the rifle dropped by the man Smoke had just shot. He worked the lever as he came up on his knees to take a shot at Smoke. The rifle slipped out of his suddenly nerveless fingers, flopped forward. A dark red pool spread on the planks under his head. Smoke scrambled to his feet and picked up his own rifle. Leaving the two renegades he had just slain behind him, he loped across the boardwalk until he was across the street from the hotel. He crouched next to the parked wagon for a moment and looked around. A lot of shooting was going on further along the street toward Longmont Saloon, but he didn't see any more Black Drum's renegades down here in this area. He started to sprint across the street toward the hotel. Bullets kicked up dust around his feet. He zigzagged and glanced up. An Indian with another Henry was firing at him from one of the hotel's second floor windows. Smoke's heart plummeted when he saw that.
Sally's room is on the second floor.
He poured on the speed and continued darting back and forth to make himself harder to hit. When he was close enough, he left his feet in a huge bound that carried him onto the hotel's front porch. The second floor balcony formed the roof of that porch. Smoke heard heavy footsteps thud on the balcony and knew the Indian who had been shooting at him had climbed out of the window. Smoke pointed the Henry up at the hurrying footsteps. Splinters rained down around him as the slugs punched through the board. The railing along the front of the balcony broke as the warrior's bullet-riddled body reeled into it. Along with the broken pieces of whitewashed wood, the renegade fell into the street. He writhed once and then sagged into the immobility of death. Smoke hit one of the hotel's front doors with his shoulder and knocked it open. He burst into the lobby and almost tripped on a throw rug. As he caught his balance, a couple of renegades with war paint on their faces started down him, leaping several stairs at a time, which actually worked against him because they kept nearly losing their balance, too. From the corner of his eye, Smoke caught a sight of a more immediate threat. Another warrior stood on the second floor balcony and had an arrow knocked and pulled back. Smoke aimed his Henry. The renegade's arrow flashed past Smoke and thudded into the trunk of a potted palm beside the entrance. Up on the balcony, the Indian who had fired the shot fell forward, flipping over the balcony and turning a somersault in the air before landing with a crash on his back atop the now deserted registration desk. Smoke turned toward the other two renegades, who had reached the bottom of the staircase by now, and charged him, brandishing tomahawks. The Henry belched fire and smoke, and one of the men flew backward. The other warrior threw his tomahawk. The heavy wooden handle hit Smoke in the shoulder, striking hard enough to make Smoke's right arm go numb. He couldn't work the rifle's lever, so he dropped it and used his left hand to jerk his knife from its sheath. The warrior yanked out his own knife. The warrior charged him just as Smoke drew his Colt from its holster. Smoke left the Henry where he had dropped it, and with the Colt in his fist, bounded up the stairs, taking him three at a time to the second floor.
Sally!
Sally, are you here?
Help! Help us!
Smoke dashed to the door the voice had come from, threw it open, and looked into the room to see two men and five women huddled there. One of the men was wounded, clutching a blood-dripping left arm with his right hand, but he was the only one who appeared to be wounded. They were all pale and shaken in terror, though. The other man was the desk clerk from downstairs.
Oh, Mr. Jensen. Oh, thank heavens. We heard the shooting below and prayed that someone had come to rescue us.
What happened?
These are the only guests who are still alive, as far as I know. When the savages attacked, I retreated up here and gathered everyone I could find. I have a gun.
The clerk held up a small pocket pistol, which wouldn't have done much good against the war party.
I heard screams from elsewhere in the hotel, and I suppose that was because the savages were killing the other guests.
He nodded toward the wounded man.
Mr. Hennessy here barely escaped from them with his life.
Everything the clerk had said so far had made Smoke's spirits plummet even more.
My wife?
She's not here. She left before the Indians attacked.
Smoke felt as if he'd been given a sudden, unexpected reprieve from a death sentence.
Did she say where she was going?
I believe she said something about saying hello to the sheriff and then paying a visit to Mr. Longmont's establishment.
Earlier, Smoke had thought for the briefest of moments about heading to Lewis's himself, but he had come here to the hotel instead. Now the knowledge that Sally might be down there gnawed at his guts. On the other hand, by coming here first, he had undoubtedly saved the lives of these folks. And he also knew that if anybody in Big Rock could keep Sally safe, Lewis Longmont was the man. Well, Lewis and Monte Carson, if by chance the two of them were together and Sally was with them. Smoke knew what he had to do.
Ladies, one of you tear some strips off a sheet and use them to bind up this man's wounds. If anybody's got a flask of whiskey, it would be a good idea to pour some of it on the bullet holes before you bandage them.
I might have some spirits. Purely for medicinal purposes, of course.
Get that done while all of you hunker down here. I didn't see any more renegades in the hotel, and I reckon they would have shown up before now if they were here. You ought to be safe here as anywhere else in town right now.
Smoke looked at the desk clerk.
But keep that gun of yours handy anyway.
I will. I assure you. What are you going to do, Mr. Jensen?
Smoke's jaw set in determination.
Find my wife.